Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and blueprints. I tell stories. I share what works, but also some of those big epic mistakes I've made along the way. I talk to experts and interview different people because ultimately I really believe that something powerful and profound happens when we empower our students with voice and choice. And I really believe it begins with the teachers. And before we get started, I just want to share something real quickly. If you are interested in professional development on empowering students with voice and choice, whether it's student-centered assessment or project-based learning, design thinking, inquiry-based learning, any of those things, it could be what we talked about on our podcast last week, this idea of helping students self-select the scaffolds, I would love to work with your school or district. You can find more information about all of the professional development I lead. I do keynotes, workshops, long-term coaching, and you can find all of that information on my website at spencerauthor.com. Just go to the speaking tab right there and you'll find it. You can also email me directly, john@spencerauthor.com. And without further ado, let's talk about this idea of creative risk-taking. Today, I want to talk about something in particular connected to that idea of what we as educators do. And it's this notion of taking creative risks. And I want to begin by telling a story from my very first year of teaching way back in the day and how that connects to the broader idea of creative risk-taking. So when I was a first-year teacher, my mentor teacher observed me teaching a lesson. Afterward, we met up during my prep period, and she said, "John, your lesson was outstanding." That felt pretty good. But then came the but, right? There's always that but. But I want to talk to you about how you're treating someone in your class. Ugh, my stomach sank. "What do you mean?" I asked, kind of skeptically. "I've noticed that you're really good at showing your students grace when they mess up. You encourage them to take creative risks. You remind them that learning is a process and mistakes are allowed. But then you turn around and demand perfection from someone else. You're really hard on him every time he makes a mistake. You're impatient with him, and I can see that he's pulling back and he's not taking risks because he's afraid." "I haven't noticed. I mean, it's not on purpose," I said. "I know it's not intentional, but it is damaging." "Who is it?" I asked. "You," she answered. I let out a sigh and cracked a smile. "You seem relieved," she said. "I am," I answered. "I thought it was one of my students you were talking about." "How is this any better?" she asked me. "Well, I just..." Immediately she cut me off. "You have to show yourself the same amount of grace that you show your students. You expect them to make mistakes, but you get mad at yourself when you make mistakes. You're patient with them, but you have no patience for your own learning curve. Take some bold risks, fail hard, and get back up and try again. It's the only way you're going to make it as a teacher," she said. Now, she was right. And that was the beginning of a long journey for me. The truth is, it has been a long, slow journey, and it's coming up on, gosh, almost 18 years of learning how to show myself grace. It wasn't until the end of the year, that particular year, that I conquered some of my big fears and actually piloted project-based learning. My journey toward empowering students often involved tackling the fear of imperfection and reminding myself that mistakes are going to just have to be a part of the process. At one point, it involved breaking up with busy, and I shared that idea in a podcast a couple years ago, and saying no to certain opportunities, even if they were fun and maybe even meaningful. But most of all, it has really been a journey of tackling my fears. And there have been a lot of them. The reality is the fear is real. Over the last few years, I've worked with teachers around the world who are taking steps toward empowering students. Whether it's been in a workshop or ongoing coaching sessions, self-paced courses, keynotes, whatever it has been, I've asked teachers to share some of the fears that they've experienced. Similarly, as a cohort leader and a professor, I asked my teacher candidates to share some of their fears that they have as they think about student-centered learning. One of the things that amazes me is just how common these fears tend to be. Whether it's an AP calculus teacher or someone who's teaching statistics over in, say, Australia, or a first grade teacher in Hong Kong, we all have a certain level of a fear of letting go of control. I've mentioned before about the fears that I had in empowering students, and I want to review some of these fears again because some of these might resonate with you. The fear that my principal might judge me, the fear that the class might get too loud, the fear that kids are going to be off task and talk the whole time, the fear of failure, the fear that I won't be able to track what the students are doing adequately, the fear that we might not hit all of the standards properly, or that students might not pass the test, the unpredictability of knowing where we're going, the fear that it might take up too much time, just the overall sense that it's a gamble. The fear of classroom management and maybe the notion that kids are just going to be off task and maybe even too loud and out of control. But honestly, all of these fears came down to a larger question of what if it fails? And as a new teacher, I was so consumed by this question, what if it fails, that I failed to ask the question, yeah, but what if it works? I was afraid to take my mentor teacher's advice and simply fail hard. The reality is, you can think about this as a flow chart of, am I sure this will work? And if the answer is yes, you get best practices. And that's good. We need best practices. If the answer is yes, though, you also get status quo. But if the answer is no, then you get experimentation, you get innovation, you get creativity in your craft. Teaching is often a mix of best practices and next practices. We know ahead of time that certain strategies are likely to work, but we also know that change occurs when we innovate and iterate and experiment. There's no guarantee that these new strategies will work. But that's okay. That's where innovation happens. Now, I want to point out that we can ground these ideas in best practices. We know, for example, that with project-based learning, it leads to increases in student achievement. There's a massive amount of data that's come out. There's some new research that came out of the Lucas Foundation. And I love it. I love knowing that it'll work. But the reality is none of the data, none of the research, none of the white papers, none of the journal articles can take away the fear that you have when you're entering into something new. Especially in my case, it was the fear that students might not do well on those district-mandated high-stakes tests. I know that PBL can lead to student achievement, but it feels like a leap of faith to actually do it. And even though my students tended to score toward the top, or if not the top, in our big benchmark tests, I was always a nervous wreck every single time before we took those tests. Here's the hard truth. It sometimes won't work. Sometimes you take a risk and it fails. Sometimes projects just don't turn out the way you want them to be. You start a project only to abandon the idea 2 days later when you realize it's not that authentic. You plan a project and realize that your students don't actually have the prerequisite skills to tackle it, and you're kind of caught off guard trying to teach these prerequisite skills, and the project ends up clunky and bad and honestly a bit of a mess, right? But that's the reality of all creative work. Creative work is easy when it's simply an idea. You can plan it out and put it away, and it's ideal, it's perfect. You know it's going to work. But the moment that you actually try to do creative work, it becomes unpredictable. I have a sticky note that I keep in my office, and it says this could fail. That sounds pessimistic, but this could fail is a reminder for me in all creative work that it might work and it might fail, but we don't know. It's an experiment. This could fail is an invitation for innovation and also a get out of jail free card for the creative work that just doesn't turn out great. It's a reminder to take big, bold, creative risks, but also to recognize that those risks might not work out perfectly, and that's okay. Now, I want to point something out. Sometimes teachers don't have the permission to take creative risks. There are times that there's a toxic culture out there with administrators who obsess over test scores or who shame teachers publicly. These actions make it harder to feel the permission to make mistakes and fail forward. You can't put up a sticky note that says this could fail if you don't have the permission to fail. By contrast, other administrators invite innovation. They encourage teachers to step outside their comfort zones and experiment with new strategies. The extent to which you take creative risk will vary significantly on your school culture. For what it's worth, in almost every year of teaching, except for one rough year, I had amazing administrators who invited this type of innovation. For me, it was about me conquering my own fears. It was not the external pressure. The perfectionism in me came from within and from a feeling like I had to be perfect at my job. And yet, here's a reality. When I observe classrooms where students are becoming problem solvers and creative thinkers, there is a common element with the teachers. They take creative risks. They experiment. They know that creative risk-taking is exactly that, a risk. It might work, it might fail. But they also recognize that the greatest risk occurs when they teach out of fear and fail to innovate in their practice. So with that in mind, I want to share 5 different things that happen when teachers take creative risks. Number 1, you build empathy with students. You know, one of the things that can happen sometimes is we get so into our creative work, whether it's in life or in teaching, that we forget just how hard it is to be new at any kind of creative work. And when we take creative risks, we build the empathy. We feel what it's like to try something and fail. I remember a moment when a group of students burst into tears because they couldn't get their solar oven to work. They had each researched possible concepts and tried out various approaches as a group after school. They were super into it. The next morning, they met up, they talked about their design, and yet when they finally attempted it, the project simply didn't work. It's easy to say it's just some cardboard and aluminum foil, but I instantly recognized how they felt. It was the same frustration I had felt when writing a book that wasn't working or trying to string together a line of code that doesn't work. I also understand when a student has a hard time getting started on creative work. I have felt that fear before. I've experienced that lack of clarity. I've walked into that uncertainty that we call writer's block, which often is just fear. The more I take creative risks, the better I am at anticipating the emotions my students will feel and experience. And I'm able to recognize that when a student seems disengaged, it's often an issue of fear and not laziness or lack of interest. Number 2, you demonstrate that failure is part of the learning process. When AJ Giuliani and I created the launch cycle, we included a phrase called highlight what's working and fix what's failing. Now, we chose the word failing for a reason. Although we could have said needs improvement or revise, or we could have talked about glows and grows, we chose failing because we wanted students to use that term failing. We wanted them to see that failing forward is part of the creative process. Now, I don't want students to embrace failure. Okay, failure is permanent, but failing is simply a part of the creative process. When this happens, students are able to embrace a growth mindset. And what you're doing for students is you're providing them slack so that they can develop grit. Number three, you create a culture of risk-taking. You're the leader of your classroom. So when you take risks with your students, you're saying to them, this is what we do. We take creative risks. But you're not simply telling them to take creative risks. You're leading them in taking risks by being the first one to do so. We tend to think that teachers need to look self-assured and confident. But the reality is when you say to students, I'm experimenting with this or I'm trying this for the first time, I don't know if it's going to work or not. In these moments, we are modeling not only creative risk-taking, but we're modeling bravery and vulnerability and trust. And those can transform the classroom culture. This is why I love the idea of learning something entirely from scratch. I know that during Genius Hour, for example, some teachers will learn how to play an instrument or learn to write code for the first time or learn a new language. And what they're doing is they're modeling that creative risk-taking for their students. Number four, you redefine the idea of inspiration. I have a little flowchart that I keep, and it says, should I write today? And then under it, it says, do I feel inspired? And both the yes and the no answers lead back to start writing. Too often we wait to be inspired in order to start our creative work, but inspiration doesn't work like that. It's not something that happens to you. It's the result of hard work and effort. It's not that inspiration isn't real. It's that inspiration is permanent. It comes from the depths of who you are. It comes from what you've consumed and who you are and what you believe and your values and your ideas, and that doesn't go away. It's what drives you to keep working even when you are uncertain. Sometimes you just have to try your way through things, and that's okay. Whether you're an artist, an engineer, a writer, a designer, or yes, a teacher, showing up and getting started is often at the heart of inspiration. And so I think it's important that we model that for students. And when we're taking creative risk, you're teaching them to redefine inspiration as something permanent, as something that's connected to this idea of creative habits. It's something that is there whether we feel like it or not. Number five, creative risk-taking is the starting place for innovation. Think of the biggest innovation you've made in your teaching practice. Chances are, it started with a creative risk. When you choose to take creative risks with your students, you are beginning the process of transforming the learning for everybody. Maybe you want a service learning program. Perhaps you want to start a makerspace, but you're not sure how it's going to turn out. Maybe you have your students filming documentaries or reporting podcasts or writing blog posts, but you're also not sure what this might look like during a time of a pandemic. No matter how big or how small these things are, these creative risks often lead to tiny innovations which iterate and over time become larger innovations. One documentary leads to a whole multimedia movement, and suddenly you're telling stories in powerful ways. Student blogging leads to kids falling in love with writing, and suddenly they're writing their own books and magazines, and you have a publishing platform. A simple service project turns into something big and profound that changes the world. It doesn't always have to be huge. That's okay if it stays small. Because even those small things are a big deal to students. When you take those creative risks, you become the teacher that they never forget. So what does this mean? It means that we treat our lessons as experiments. We remember that mistakes are the crap that makes growth possible. You can think of it as the creative fertilizer, right? It stinks and it's crappy, but it works. It allows for growth. in the end, when we take creative risks as teachers, our students become creative risk takers and problem solvers as a result. And that's something that will last forever. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, will you tell a friend about it? Word of mouth is one of the best ways for folks to find out. And if you're up for it, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast. Again, I just want to remind you that I do workshops and virtual and in-person keynotes and any kind of professional development, coaching as well. So if you are interested in that, just send me an email. It's john@spencerauthor.com. Again, that's john@spencerauthor.com. But again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.